Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This week's episode is recorded with Alvin Zeidenfeld. You might know him as Al Smizzle or just as Smiz. He's an accomplished daily fantasy player. You might have heard he won the Millionaire Maker, has been at the game for a long time, and is now kind of transitioning into providing streaming and YouTube content, and that's a large part of the conversation that we had today, kind of about the world of DFS, how it's changed, and also the future of content in general, and the role that Twitch and YouTube will play in it. As always, please leave a rating and review on iTunes, or if you really want to support the show and get some extra TakeCast episodes, you can subscribe to the Patreon, www.patreon.com/takecast, and that link is, of course, in the show notes if you want to support the show, get some extra episodes. We've been having good fun with that, having had some success in the showdown slate analysis that we have done, and after a quick ad, we will get right into the podcast. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections, faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, everyone, would like to welcome to the TakeCast my good buddy, Alvin Zeidenfeld. You might know him as Al Smizzle. A guy I remember being in fantasy sports from a very young age, let's say. I remember like watching Grinders live shows when I was like 19, 20, like trying to build NBA DFS lineups, and it was like you and CSU were always the guy on like the 6 o'clock Grinders live shows. That was like my big introduction to daily fantasy.
Yeah, we had kind of a cast of killers back then, right? I mean, if you look at the guys that were doing Grinders Live back in the day, and it's Grinders Live is now old enough that I'm getting Facebook memories about Grinders Live posts I made 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah, like the DFS industry now, we've gone through like 3 iterations. There was the pre Ethan Gate iteration where it was all content all the time, and it was mostly videos and podcasts, and then there was the big pullback after the Ethan stuff happened, and now DFS content, especially on these podcasts and on these live shows, everyone's just talking about tournament strategy. No one wants to talk about cash game strategy anymore. Like that sort of talk is completely dead. People who create DraftKings accounts now, they just want to win $1 million.
I mean, because that's fun, right? It's winning $1 million is kind of a cool thing. You know, yeah. People like winning $1 million. They like the chance at winning $1 million. And the sweat when you know, even if you don't quite get there, it makes that Sunday that much more exciting, right? So everybody's looking for like the game theory and what can I do that's going to make me – it's the same as everything else. You just have to score more points than your opponents. Are there ways that you can mathematically put yourself in a position to be able to do that possibly a little bit more frequently than others? Yes. Is it learnable? I think that you can get better at it. But to some degree, I think Love's Bases kind of nailed it. I don't remember exactly when he said this. It was probably 6 months to a year ago. He said, at some level, when it comes to daily fantasy, just like when it comes to poker, you either have it or you don't have it. You know?
Yeah.
You like think about it in terms of like, you know, we talk about video games, you and me, Davis, all the time. I know you like playing games and stuff. Obviously, I do too. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners play Madden or FIFA or whatever. You have your own internal potential rating for how good you can actually be at daily fantasy sports, right? For your ability to process that information, look at a spreadsheet and come up with the right combination or list of combinations, players that you want to have allocations to, whatever. And you can learn whatever you can learn, but you're capped by your overall potential rating. And some people just have a higher potential rating than others. Some people start with a higher base rating than others. And it's easier for them to get all the way up to reach their potential. Some players just aren't going to be able to process that information. No matter how much coaching they get, they're just going to make the wrong decisions because that's what it comes down to. Again, just like poker, daily fantasy comes down to the number one rule in poker that I was taught was make good decisions. If you do that in daily fantasy, you will be a profitable player over time. If you do that in poker, you'll be a profitable player over time. There's some people that their mind keeps them from making good decisions when it comes to things. And I do a show every single week where like I take questions from people and they're like, hey, what do you think about this guy that you haven't even mentioned this week for cash game lineups? And my answer is, why? How did you get there?
Every time you get that question, as a content provider, as like a daily fantasy person, every time you get that question when someone's like, oh, well, what do you think about Peyton Barber and cash? It's just you don't even know where to start because there's nothing you can communicate to explain why that shouldn't even be in your head.
Now, against Atlanta, I kind of get that, right? It's like, okay, any running back against Atlanta, fine. Like that, but like every other week, what about this running back? He might get 8 touches this week, but 3 of them could come through the air. What if I put him in cash? Don't do that. Stop thinking that way.
That's a really interesting way to put it because I have like the way my brain works is I'm not nearly as good at tournaments. I have to really work to build good tournament lineups. Like even with all of the tools that are out there, even using Lineup HQ on RotoGrinders or Cruncher or whatever, I have to really sit at it and look at it for a while and mess with the percentages until I think what I have is a good product. Cash games make way more sense to me. It's easier for me to focus on just one really good lineup as opposed to building 10 or 20 decent lineups because it's hard for me just mentally to make the calculation between what is just a really good play and to weigh that versus what that play's ownership percentage is going to be.
I mean, when you're talking about cash games, you're looking at guys that have a high floor and possibly have a high ceiling. When you're looking at tournaments, you're looking at guys that have the ability to have a high ceiling and how they work with the other players you're putting around them in that tournament lineup and to some degree eschewing their floor, right? Like, I'm willing to take Amari Cooper in tournaments because he can throw up a 35-point fantasy day, right? He can also throw a 3.5-point fantasy day. So he will never be anywhere near my cash game lineups. It's been well chronicled on the edge, right?
Sure.
But he's somebody that I have to consider for tournaments. And when I consider him for tournaments, it's on weeks that I think he's not going to be really highly owned, right?
Right.
Because, like, I don't want to have a guy that's 30% owned that might go for 3.5 or might go for 35. I'll avoid him that week. I'll take him the week he's going to be like 8% owned and maybe take 15% and double the field, right? Essentially.
Yeah.
If he does have that big day, it's great. And if he doesn't, it doesn't kill my entire allocation of lineups. I'm not going to lock button a 3.5 floor guy.
Yeah, you can't do that. So one of the things I wanted to talk about having you on the show was why daily fantasy sports has become such a passion of yours, because you're someone who is successful in another life. Like you are in the fantasy sports game because you love it. So I kind of want to talk about your journey through, you know, Grinders Live and ESPN and Daily Fantasy Bootcamp and all of that stuff. Where did it start? Like, were you watching sports with your dad when you were four, knowing, you know, you kind of just always wanted to be involved in this in your life?
It was a long road, right? So like the short story, or the shortest story I could tell you about that is, okay, I started when I was a kid. I was always a big sports fan. Just like a lot of other kids, I wanted to be a professional athlete when I grew up. I want to be a baseball player. I want to be a football player. I want to be a fireman or an astronaut, right?
Yeah.
So my dad had season tickets to like the Dodgers and the Angels. And then we got season tickets to the Raiders. And like, we didn't really go to a lot of basketball games when I was a kid. It just wasn't my dad's thing. He was an older dude. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time at sports stadiums and I really loved it. When I was 13, I got into just playing rotisserie leagues. So I'm flipping 45 now. So this is 32 years of playing fantasy sports at this point. I started playing daily fantasy in 2012, opening day of baseball, because baseball was the sport that I took most seriously. And it's like, a lot of the people that came in and did really well in daily fantasy sports were just like me, in the sense that they were the guys that took their home friends and family fantasy league way more seriously than everybody else in their friends and family league.
Yeah.
Where people would look at them and say, why do you take this so seriously? And I'd be like, why don't you take it as seriously as I do? So that group of people came in, and this is like you were saying, like before the lineup builder era, and then after the lineup builder era, you look at it.
Those are really the two eras.
You're looking before week four of 2015 and after week four of 2015 was the way that you broke it down. I look at it for when it became open to everybody to use lineup builders, and before when I was building
your definition is way more correct. Yeah, your definition.
I don't know what's correct and not correct. I'm just, that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
You know? Once that became open source and like every site had a lineup builder with the ability to upload a CSV to the sites, because I was building 120 to 150 lineups by hand in the MilliMaker. And I would spend every Thursday making 125 lineups on two different sites. It was exhausting. You know?
Yeah.
Just getting them up, you know, just on the sites. But we digress. So like I came in kind of firing in 2012 and like high stakes back then was like a 535. If you posted a 535, it was like, hey,
look at this guy with a 535 head out there.
Yeah. This guy, how rich, right?
Right.
So I was posting like 109s back then. I play like 10 109s a day in baseball. And I did really well my first year. And then I took some time off later that summer because that was right after my second son was born and things were just piling on too much. So I was like, okay, I'm going to step away from this. I'll come back when football season starts. Qualified for my first live final, which was that Draft Street football final in 2012. I think I came in 19th, which sounds really good, but there were 20 competitors.
Yeah, Ben Pritchett. That was so long ago that Ben Pritchett could qualify for a live final.
Ben Pritchett was a thing in 2012, yeah.
Yeah, correct.
Pritchett was there. STL Cards was in that final. Hicksville Hunk, Drew Dinkmeyer, DP was in that final. I can't remember exactly who else, but like it was a lot of dudes that are still in the industry today had qualified for that Draft Street final. And then 2013, I won the Draft Street basketball championship, the site championship for that one. And like a week or two later, I got interviewed by Dan Bach for the Roto Grinders podcast. And then I emailed him like a week later. I said, I see you're starting a live show with David Kitchen. And I want to be on it. And I think I'll do a good job. And the reason that I said I needed to be on it, because my wife was like, I think I could do this pretty pretty well and pretty seriously. And she said, well, you were a poker player before. I was a poker player for like 8 years. And I just played. I didn't do content. I didn't, you know, do any, like, I just kind of played. And she's like, you got kids now. You can't just play. Like, if you want to do this, you have to, like, write articles. You have to do a podcast. You have to, you know, put out content in some way, become a brand and do things. You can't just be a player.
So yeah, you got to have the secondary income stream.
But, like, it wasn't even about the income. It was more about your kid is 2.5 now. You know, what are you going to do when he goes to school and, you know, what does your daddy do? He plays fantasy football. You know?
Yeah.
It's not really explainable to it, as opposed to what does your dad do? Oh, he does radio shows and podcasts and writes articles. It's a different, you know, it's a different explanation. So I had this like 5-year plan in 2013, and Cal Spears and Dan Bach will back this up. I said, ESPN does not have a daily fantasy sports guy, and I want to be that guy. And I have this list of steps that I have to go through along the way, like Matt Damon in The Martian, to get to that seemingly unreachable goal of getting from Mars to Earth and being the ESPN DFS guy.
Right.
So one of them was get on Roto Grinders, get on a live show. From there, it was get on SiriusXM and prove that you can talk at the level of all the other experts on SiriusXM. From there, it was do these other things, all these different paths that I had to go along. And I said it was like a 5-year, you know, I had a 5-year plan to maybe be the ESPN guy. Well, we got there by 2015. From starting at Roto Grinders in about March of 2013. So the 5-year plan became like a 2-year plan, and then we're just kind of here today.
And there's been a lot of twists and turns along the road for all of us. Like, I think, like, there was times when we all thought, oh, well, this is the next billion-dollar industry. Like, this is going to take over. People are going to want to play daily fantasy more than they're going to want to play season-long. And that kind of did not happen. I do think that DFS has made season-long more popular, though.
I think that season long has obviously become a lot more popular. I'm not going to credit it to daily fantasy. I just think that fantasy itself is growing and will continue to grow. Football is still growing, but growing at a slower rate than like fantasy basketball. I think daily fantasy basketball is way more fun than season long fantasy basketball. I think that people will always love their friends and family leagues and obviously the high stakes against people that they don't know. But football is the easiest convertible sport for a season-long player to start as a daily fantasy player. Basketball is a lot more difficult, obviously, because just the way that the game is played is a lot different.
Yeah, there's multitudes. Right, yeah, there are just so many things you have to be good at, to projecting minutes and usage and ratios. Like, it's a very math-intensive. I do think that a big thing that's going in the favor of daily fantasy sports, you know, long-term 5-year plan for daily fantasy sports is just, you know, people's attention spans are just so bad. And it's just like getting someone to sign up for a season long ESPN league. Like, how are you ever going to convince your buddies to pay attention to a basketball league for 6 months? I don't even know if that's something that's possible.
That's kind of why I think best ball for at least, especially for NFL, it should be the future. Yeah.
I'm wrong. There's nothing I love more than best ball. Like, best ball drafts, like from March to August. Like, that for me is like, that is the high point of my fantasy season, is doing all those drafts.
I will always love drafting. You know, like, that's back to, like, that's the most fun. Babysitting a roster from week to week, doing waiver wires and picking who to start. Am I going to spend time picking who should be in my starting lineup that weekend? That maybe in 6 months I can get $300 from or $500 from.
Right.
Or am I going to focus on these lineups over here that I can win hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not, you know, two commas this weekend? Which one's going to get prioritized to me? So my season-long leagues, just the volume gets turned way down, which is why I like best ball leagues, because I still get to draft. I still get to have my guys that I like for that year, and this is who I'm going after. And if they do well, great. If they don't, whatever. Because it's such a small percentage of what I'm playing on a given Sunday of NFL DFS, and I still get the sweat of playing daily fantasy.
And that, I mean, that's, I guess that's kind of the beauty of daily fantasy sports, is the most fun of fantasy sports is the draft of setting the roster. It's not even the sweat. It's not even, I mean, winning fantasy is pretty great.
Playing against your friends is fun. Like having, like to this day, me and my college roommate, whenever we would play, and we stopped our league 2 years ago, I ran my league for like 20 years. We would play. And it was like something was on at risk. We would always bet like something. Like I'd have to put like a Jets avatar on something, and he'd have to put like a Buccaneers avatar if I beat him. It's like there's always those like friendly rivalries. Like you get up for those weeks, but you don't necessarily get up for just anybody. You know, like, oh, this is another guy. Like, I hope I win, whatever.
Right. Like I have this home league. Friends from high school, this league has existed for a decade now, and it's like the only league on Sunday that I'm sweating along with DFS. Like I'm sweating, you know, this is like $100 entry fee, but I'm like sweating whoever I'm playing against in this league while like all my DraftKings line. And like, you know, if I win that league, it will matter nothing if I have a good or bad DFS season, but I still have that league pulled up because, and I don't know if you get this, but do your friends give you a hard time when you're bad because you're supposed to be good? Like my friends give me a horrible time when my team in this league is bad.
I mean, that doesn't just stop at my friends. That's literally everyone on the internet. Like if I get anything wrong, it's over.
Right, yeah. Like,
and
I mean,
I'm going to get something wrong. It's impossible to predict the future with 100% accuracy.
Even 50% accuracy is a good clip.
I mean, if I can do it with 56% accuracy, at least I can be profitable.
Well, there we go. That's a good number. That's a good transition to talk about that 56% number. From your end, how have you already seen this sports betting legalization stuff kind of start to change our industry? Have you noticed anything big in terms of content providing or anything like that?
I mean, I think that it was easy to see when it was going through the courts to see daily fantasy personalities trying to reposition themselves as sports betting personalities. And look, don't get left out in the cold, right? Do the next thing, be ahead of the curve. I get it. I've inadvertently, I guess, been that guy for the last 20 years, just doing whatever I want and so just following it and being the early adopter and being in first. Because if you can establish yourself and you have a following, it allows you to do that. I mean, I've never been a sports bettor. The only time I really bet sports is when I would go to Vegas for the big Super Bowl parties and stuff, like Bellagio and Wynn or whatever. Like they invite you to the big ballrooms and all this food. Big screens everywhere. It's the greatest place to watch Super Bowl.
We watched soccer in the sports book at one of the DK finals. We were down. I don't know if you bet
any. I remember that. It was baseball. It was a baseball final.
Yeah.
Because yes, it was definitely the baseball final. It was 2015 baseball final.
Yeah. At the Wynn?
At the Wynn.
Yeah.
But this isn't in a sports book. They get like, you know, the ballrooms that DK has for the finals?
Right, yeah.
Imagine not that ballroom, but like the grand ballroom.
All of them, yeah.
Just movie screen TVs everywhere for the Super Bowl. And that's really the only time that I would bet sports. So like, look, I've even decided, look, I want to see how I can do, what type of percentage can I get if I track my plays over the course of the year. So I've been picking 5 games against the spread every week, and I think 6 people are reading that article, and I'm doing all right. I'm not doing great, but you know, I'm above 50%. I forget my exact record on the year. I could look it up if you want, but I thought, you know, it's above 500, and I want to see what I can do over the course of the season. But I'm not trying to like say, oh look, I'm really good at daily fantasy, so I'm going to be really good at sports betting, because I think that they're two totally different animals.
They are. And you know what a lot of people have told me who are much more experienced at sports betting is that for NBA and NFL or NBA and baseball, it's like the numbers guys, the spreadsheets guys who are really good, like the people with really good predictive analytics that are like proprietary to them. But in NFL, the people that do really well are more of like the old school guys, like the guys who follow the rules, like West Coast teams going east or unders and divisional games. Like those are actually the guys who are winning now in NFL versus like the hyper computer guys.
I wonder if that's going to remain constant as we get more McVays and we get more Shanahans and we get more coaches in the NFL that are paying more attention to analytics, are going to do things more the right way. Speaking of doing things the right way, Mike McCoy was fired this morning.
Yeah, just fired. Thank God. Yeah. Prayers up.
Like, as we started this, right? So, you know, speaking of somebody who's doing things the wrong way, what if they replace him? I mean, they've replaced him with Leftwich, right? But, like, what if Leftwich is like, look, can we get David Johnson the ball in space? Hey, guys, what if we try this?
Yeah.
This thing that worked great before that we aren't doing at all now. Can we try that? And maybe that'll work better.
I mean, I definitely think there's something for said.
Every coach doing that, maybe the betting will change as well.
I also think that there is – I was thinking about this last night, actually. Is I think maybe the lines might get – the lines might be altered by more and more soft money coming in the pools. Like, with more public money, and I wonder what that would do to the lines. Like, would more steam go to very public teams? Like, if the public has a very clear perception of one game, and all of a sudden we're shifting this public from, like, you know, people who have the ability to buy Bitcoin online and deposit it on an offshore sports book to, like, you know, 10% of American males, maybe. Like, maybe that, like, what would you think the max cap of if it was legal across everyone? I mean, I could see a future where
I would only be guessing. I would honestly just be guessing randomly at a number. I have no idea what percentage of grown, you know, legal age males would be gambling on sports, whether it was for $10 a weekend or $10,000 a weekend. I have no idea. I just know it would be large.
Yeah, it could be a lot of people. And I think maybe, and I guess an issue we have seen is with these legal sports books is the lines are horrible. The juice is, like, unreal. They just can't compete with what the offshore books are offering. Like, these lines that the DK and FanDuel sports books have offers have been, they've been like 50 cent lines on baseball games, which is crazy.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, it's available in what, just New Jersey right now?
Right. Yeah.
So, like, maybe it's because it's such a small market and they have to spend so much on marketing. I have no idea why the lines or why the vig is different from the standard vig or what it would be. And maybe that'll change as they get national. Who knows? Obviously not my area of expertise, but I agree with you. And the biggest, I agree with you on the sense that how would the lines change the more public money gets involved? And I think that we already saw that happen with the McGregor Mayweather fight when everybody and their mom said, "Oh, I want Connor. I want to put money on Connor. Look at him. He's talking. He's walking. He's doing all this nonsense before the fight. Yeah, I'm going to put 20 on him. I'm going to put 50 on him. I'm going to put 100 on him because I get like 30-1. And that line, which was probably correct when it came out, so much money was being bet that it kept coming down to a point where Mayweather was such a ridiculous value. And I forget who tweeted it, but somebody said this is the most efficient shift of dumb money to smart money in the last 20 years.
There was another good tweet, and I also can't remember it, but someone tweeted before the fight, if Mayweather loses, the high stakes poker community is about to become the mid stakes poker community.
Same idea.
Yeah. They're like, one of my biggest regrets in all of sports betting is, like, not, like, borrowing money to put down on Mayweather. Like, I had a decent chunk on Mayweather, but not near. Like, if I could have gotten
what
more,
did he go,
like,
off at? 100 got you what?
100 would have gotten you 25 back, I think. I think it was right. I think it was like -400, -425.
It should have been like -2500.
It should have been like the United States versus Zambia in soccer or something. Like, okay. Like, France versus Ghana, something wild like that. It should have been like a completely insane line, and it just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, so it was, and everybody was just racing to put money. I saw, okay, not that this is some mathematical evidence, but at least it was a really large sample. On the day of the last UFC with Connor, right, 229, where Connor lost, Ninja tweeted out a poll, right? And granted, what's Ninja's follower base? They're young, they're stupid, whatever.
Right.
You know, they're not sharp sports bettors is what I mean. I don't mean they're stupid.
Yes.
All the Ninja followers, Team Ninja is going to come after me now. The poll ended up, you know, who's going to win, Connor or whatever the Russian dude's name is? It was like 85% Connor. That's the public.
Yeah, that
85%?
Is. 85%? Yeah. That is pretty wild, because I generally don't think of the public as being that bad in NFL, but I guess those are the same kinds of people who are moving the lines in terms of the public money. Like sharp sports bettors will always tweet things about like, oh, 70% of tickets are on this team, but 80% of the money is on the other side. And it's kind of just like, I personally, as someone who it's like, I'm just now kind of really getting into this, it's hard to know what to make of it. Like, should you really just fade the public if that's your only reasoning? I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, there's always the line of they're not building large, you know, casino resorts in Las Vegas because the public is smart.
True. Yeah. That's a very real thing. And I guess if you're ever wondering on the side of a bet, or if you're ever wondering if long-term you're a profitable sports bettor, just go look at the Wynn Ballroom and then think about it.
I mean, look, if we were to ask our follower base is way more in tune with what's going on in sports betting versus Ninja's follower base, right? That's kind of where I was going with this, right? Not saying like every one of my followers is a super sharp sports bettor, but they're paying more attention, right? And they know where the value is a lot of times, right? Which is why if you watch, if you look at the percentage owned in like the Edge Listener League versus the percentage owned in a like size open to the public GPP on DraftKings,
yeah,
the ownerships are more centralized around the good plays. If you look at the high stakes 50-50s versus the low stakes 50-50s, the ownership is more centralized and more heavy on the best plays on the slate, because those tournaments are more sharp than just the regular. So our follower bases are more sharp than the public is. That doesn't mean that they're always right. But if you take a look at somebody who actually has a wide scope of what the public is actually following them, not just we are very interested in sports and sports betting and daily fantasy, which is where our follower base is, you're going to get a more true answer. So like I said, that 85% Connor was like eye-opening to me.
Yeah. And that, I mean, this is a good transition, because while the public might not always be the sharpest in figuring those things out, the public is what buys stuff. It's what pays for content. And something I really wanted to talk to you about was streaming and being on Twitch and kind of being in that world, because I think you and I are aligned in this, and we both sort of think that that is the future of content providing and of the way people will consume media. It's actually something I talked to Mike LaBelle about when I had him on the show. Just the more niche you can provide content, the more engaged your audience is going to be. Like if you're a niche inside of a niche inside of a niche, and you're the only one doing it, or you're one of five people doing it, that's a huge market to capture, because those people don't have anything else to spend their money or time on other than engaging your content. So I kind of just wanted to know, you know, how did you find streaming? How did you end up getting there?
Okay. I'm trying to think exactly why and how I started. Okay, so 2 years ago, essentially, I said I was in Boston for the NFL draft. It was the John Ross draft, right? So it was a year and a half, almost a little more than that now.
Yeah.
And I thought that there was a vacated space. You know, I used to coach basketball, and our zone basketball philosophy against our zone offense philosophy is where somebody vacates, you fill.
Yeah.
Right. So like if you throw it to the wing in a 2-3 zone, the forward has to come out and guard that. Well, if you're the post player, go where the forward was, because that spot is vacated and you'll be open and we can get you the ball, and that forces the zone to move more. So I had been putting out streaming content since Grinders Live, essentially, just nobody viewed it as streaming. Oh, yeah. It's a show. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, nobody's on Twitch. Right. There's nobody doing good content on Twitch. There's nobody doing DFS content on Twitch. I mean, good content for this audience, right?
Yeah.
There's nobody. Then later I figured out there's nobody doing stuff on YouTube as well, at least not at the level that I thought it could be done, right? I didn't figure that out early enough, and that's my own fault. I wish I had figured out YouTube 5 years ago.
Right. Talking about vacated money streams, figuring out YouTube 5 years ago, you'd be a millionaire now.
It's so gross. Like, not figuring out how to beat YouTube when I started doing this stuff is a big regret for me.
Yeah.
You know? And it seems like You can just, well, what do you mean? You just upload a video to YouTube. Yeah, but there's more to it than that, right? Like that's a whole different podcast. But like when it came to like why I started streaming, I was like, well, this is a vacated area and nobody's there. And it's something that can be monetized, which is something that other people aren't doing in that way. Yeah, I could just, I could have very easily just said, you know what? I'm going to stop writing Best Buys for ESPN. I'm going to take Best Buys. I'm going to put together the video shows that I do on Twitch, and I'm going to put it in the marketplace on RotoGrinders. I'm going to charge X amount of dollars for it, mm-hmm. and that's it. But I'm trying to do things a little bit differently, and I'm trying to see, you know, what ways can I grow a brand as opposed to just what's the easiest path to monetization, because like the monetization for content isn't going to be as lucrative as just playing if you're a really, really good player. So it's more of a buffer. So how can I grow the brand and continue to do things and maybe be able to branch into something else? You know, if this whole daily fantasy thing doesn't work out over time, whether because sports gambling is coming or whatever else, right? So I said, let's get into Twitch. I can do shows a little bit differently. I can be a one-man band. I don't have to rely on a producer and co-hosts and all these other things. And it's more engaging with the audience and stuff. And it was a path to go down, trying to, again, setting a goal of how can I go from somebody who just hit start streaming on OBS to how can I get that purple check mark and be a partnered streamer on Twitch?
Mm-hmm.
And I had been doing those same shows before Twitch on Facebook. Every Friday, 3 years ago, I was doing a one-hour question and answer on Facebook Live, right?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, why don't I just take this show and put it on Twitch? Because Facebook Live or Periscope has no monetization. There's nothing I can do for that.
Yeah.
I can grow my Facebook page, but who the hell cares about growing your public Facebook page?
Yeah.
So I decided to take that show to Twitch, and it's worked out great. I've got a big group of subscribers at this point. We had 2,000 concurrent viewers for the Sunday show last week. I've got a show later today in a couple of hours where I do the same Friday 1 hour question and answer show. I take that, I upload that to YouTube. YouTube is essentially a really big search engine. So people right, that have yeah. never heard of me before are finding me through YouTube and then coming back to Twitch. And then our Twitch community for the subscribers, we have like a Discord channel so people can sit in there. So I'm building this entire community that started just around me hitting start stream on OBS. And it's a lot of fun, but it also allows me to do things like play video games on stream, where when I first started, I'd have like 5 viewers. Now it's like I got 50 or 70 concurrent viewers to watch me do something that has absolutely no actionable information whatsoever. It's, no, it's just fun. Kind of hanging out.
Yeah. We did that. We did like three years ago. At this point, we streamed on Twitch. We played we played like duos on FIFA.
Yeah, we played FIFA together. I think we played one together and one against each other, and we just kind of talked about football.
Yeah, I'm an egregious.
That's what this stream is. It's just me doing that, and people will be in the chat like, "Hey, what do you think about this game this week?" And I don't know. It's gonna be fun, but we just, you know, playing FIFA or playing some other game or Fortnite or Tarkov or whatever, and just having fun, hanging out.
It's kind of something I've been throwing it back and forth for a while. It's definitely like an extra time commitment when you're grinding. Like when I'm grinding content during football season, it's definitely like an extra commitment. And I would kind of like to do it more in the off season, but providing like you do need to start from a place of like providing actionable content and advice, I think, to hook people in to begin with. And that's a tough leap for me.
I mean, you can have it be whatever you want it to be. The question is, what is your goal, right? So like getting affiliate status on Twitch isn't difficult. You got to have like 50 followers and an average, you know, like in 3 streams a week with an average of like 5 concurrent viewers. It's really not difficult to reach affiliate status. When you get affiliate status, you get a sub button. People can subscribe to you.
Yeah.
You know, you can take bit donations. You can do, you know, whatever people want to do. It's very easy to reach affiliate status. Once you get that, you can just do whatever you want. So like you said, it's very difficult to have time during NFL season, especially now with NBA and NFL overlap.
Right? Yeah, it's just like from the time I wake up until the time I go to sleep, like from like 8 to 7, I'm basically working on something right now.
I mean, look, I could probably get more viewers if I streamed at night.
Yeah.
Right? Like if I streamed at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, to 7:30 or 8 p.m. Pacific time, I would have more viewers. Why? Because East Coast is already at home and West Coast is at home or getting home from work.
Yeah.
And they can just switch on my stream. But that's not how life works, right? At that point in time, I'm a husband and a dad. I got to take care of my kids. I got to get dinner. I got to talk to, you know, how was your day? How was your day? I got to do that whole dad thing. So I can't stream at that time. So I end up streaming usually in the mornings where, like, I'm probably hurting my concurrent viewers, but whatever. You know, that's why I also utilize YouTube. People can't make it to the live show because they've got jobs.
Right.
So they'll catch the thing when they can on their lunch break or whatever, or that night on YouTube.
It would be, for me, it would be amazing to be able to monetize playing FIFA. It would make me feel a lot, make me feel a lot better about it because I'm gonna be doing that regardless. So it would be amazing to monetize that process instead of sitting there like opening packs and being like, well, never going to see this money again.
I always get shocked when I get a new subscriber during a video game stream.
Right.
I find it flattering, hilarious, and like, really? You're subbing to me because of my talent at this video game right now? Really? You're subbing to this?
I mean, it's amazing. Like, there are guys who I watch, like, their FIFA YouTube videos who, like, they're not any good at the game. Like, they're, like, just okay. But, like, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's entertaining.
You're subbing to an entertainer. You're subbing to a personality. You're subbing because you like the show and the thing that they're putting forward for you.
Yeah. And, like, it is actually cool. I like the integration that Twitch has with Amazon. I assume Amazon bought Twitch at some point. Yeah. Where you can... Amazon, man. There's Yeah, they own everything. But yeah, the ability.
You've seen Wall-E, right?
Yeah. That's the future.
That's Amazon. Yeah.
That's I every time Wall-E has probably come up on this podcast more than any other piece of art or entertainment through 40 episodes. This is easily the most discussed because everyone at some point it just turns into, oh, I'm addicted to my cell phone. I can't turn it off. I can't turn the screen off.
Yeah, this is what was the story of Big and Large?
Yes.
That's the store. That's Amazon.
Yeah. Oh man.
Jeff Bezos is going to be the dude that's on the thing. Okay. So you guys got to get on this spaceship now and go off and we'll tell you when there's a life ready to be here on Earth again. But until then, have fun on the, whatever the hell the name of the show, the Titanic.
I actually just saw like Truth is Stranger Than Fiction. Like there's like a colony currently being planned for like somewhere outer space and Bezos is like involved in it.
Of course he is. I'm telling you, it's Wall-E. It was a great documentary.
Yeah, that's real life. How many podcasts do you listen to as a content creator yourself?
I wish I listened to more. I listen to like 3.
That's the first time on the show anyone has said they wish they listened to more. Everyone pretty much is like, oh, I have too many. I could never keep up.
Yeah, I can't. Like, there's just not enough hours in the day, right?
Right.
And like, this is going to sound, this is the most first world problem that you're going to hear on your podcast for a while, but like, I don't know.
We've had Drew on, so there's been a decent number of first world problems.
I don't have an assistant this year. So like, I'm the one man band.
Yeah, tough life.
And my wife works like, you know, during football season, I end up working like 78 hours a week. My wife with her jobs works like 70, 80 hours a week. And it's by choice. She can't not work.
Right.
That's just who she is. So like she runs a production company and she runs a charitable foundation and does all these different speaking engagements. She's going to be at Politicon next week, like on a panel.
Yeah.
So like, and this weekend she's got an Oktoberfest festival that she's putting on. She's left today at 5 a.m. to go set it up. She's working the next 2 days at the festival for 14-hour days. So like I've got the kids by myself. When they get out of school, I got to pick them up today. We got to go do whatever we got to do after school today. They got plenty of extracurriculars, all this other thing. So like,
yeah.
I don't have 8-9 hours a day at a desk where I can just, okay, 45 minutes on this podcast or say 30 minutes on this podcast because it's on 1.5 or 2x speed, hit the next one, hit the next one, hit the next one. I'm either streaming, pushing stuff out on YouTube, writing an article, or in the afternoons handling my kids. So like, I don't really have that much desk time anymore.
Yeah, my podcast consumption during football season actually goes way down because I just don't have the time. Yeah, I just don't have the time. And like sure, I could have it on in the background while I'm like working on an article or something, but I'm not going to get any of it. None of it's going to sink in. Mm-hmm. So like the times when I would have to listen is normally when I'm playing video games. Like if you set aside an hour, Like, you're just like, I'm going to go play FIFA, and you have, and like, honestly, it's like Sophie's choice though. You got to choose which one you're going to listen to.
No, see, FIFA, you can play and listen to stuff. FIFA, you can watch somebody stream while playing FIFA.
Right. Yeah.
Or sit there in a voice chat with your buddies and play FIFA, because it's not that distracting. If you're playing like a shooter.
Yeah, you can't be listening.
You can't. It's like, if I'm playing a shooter, I cannot listen to anything else. So, like, I have to hear all the noises, and you're listening for footsteps, and you're, you know, like, there's a shot. It sounds like it's about 200 meters away, northwest. I got to figure, you know, you can't do that if there's a podcast in your ear.
That's actually why I like sports video games so much, as opposed to playing like RPGs or whatever, is because, like, I could never apply that much focus to a video game. It was not possible for me. But like, if I'm just sitting there grinding, you know, squad battles, it's like, what, I could do that with like one hand.
You do squad battles?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Oh, I hate squad battles.
I'm not very good though. I think you're.
I just don't want to do them.
I'm like, I would, in like the old weekend league standard, I was just like gold three every weekend. That was as good as I was able to be.
I mean, that's kind of what I ended on every week, because I hate playing weekend league. Yeah, so I was like, what qualifies me for the next weekend league? Gold three, I'm in. All right, yeah, 14. Just, what was it, 18 wins it used to be? And then they cut it down to like 14.
And then 11. Like,
all right, that's all I need. You don't even need 11 now. Because if you get 6 or 7, you get 1,000 qualifications points.
I haven't even gotten the qualification point. Like, I haven't even played.
You haven't gotten your 2,000? Stop playing squad battles. Start playing Division Rivals.
My team's not very good.
Who cares? You get points if you lose.
It's true. This you is get 150 this is
points if you lose. You get 90 points for every goal.
And this is niche talk. Yeah.
What's that?
This is what we're talking about. This is like when I had Michael Bell, and like, this is for not only the niche of people who play video games and the people who play sports video games and the people who play FIFA, but the people who play Ultimate Team enough to like know all the different categories and like, you know, what players are good, what players are meta, and all of that.
I realize that everybody just switched off your podcast too, by the way. So for the three people that are still here, we appreciate you.
Yeah, we love it. I mean, this is the biggest area of my life that I don't talk about on the podcast because no one cares. But it's definitely something that I pay attention to and care about.
That's the thing. People care. You're going to get the people that are like, that are going to act, oh, I don't care. What are you talking? I don't care about your video games. I don't care about it. But then there's also people who are like, hey, I play that game and it's fun. And I would love to talk to somebody else about it. Yeah. Right. And I see, like I said, it's like if I switched on FIFA as soon as we get off this recording right now, I'd have 50 or 70 people watching me play FIFA, my terrible butt at FIFA 19, playing this game. And just chit-chatting about stuff, watching me open packs, grinding my way through weekend league or whatever, right? People would watch because it's fun to just see somebody else going through the same thing that you're going through,
right,
whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, with the same game that you play. So there's this sense of community that you get from other people that play the game. And then there's other people that said, hey, I've never played FIFA, or I've never played this other game that you're, but I'm going to buy it because you seem to really be enjoying it. So let me try it out.
And I think the thing that people like so much about streaming is that it's like, it's a much more interactive experience than like watching Netflix or watching movies or whatever. Like, you generate the attachment and then you just follow along, and it's nice to be able to follow like that linearity and be able to like converse back and forth.
Certain games have good storytelling, I like to say, right? Yep,
so definitely
Ultimate Team has very good storytelling. If you follow that person for a while, they have this guy on the team, they sold this player, this player was really good for them, so he's an anchor of their team. And then people are building series, or have been for years building series around this, like Nick28T or Nepenthes or these other guys that do like what's called a Road to Glory team. Right now everybody's doing Road to Glory teams, or this year they're doing what's called a First Owner Road to Glory, which, if you don't know what Ultimate Team is, for the three of you that are still here, you probably opened baseball cards when you were a kid. If you're somebody like me, like Davis, who loves sports and, you know, plays daily fantasy, you probably have looked at a baseball card or opened a pack of baseball, football, basketball cards at some point in your life. So imagine if you could take those cards that you get out of your packs and then put them into a team together and play other people's stacks of cards that they've put into a team together. That's the game that we're talking about essentially here. So
It's the most brilliant money-making scheme in the history of humanity. EA Sports prints money with this every, it's unbelievable because obviously you want to have a better team, better players, so you can win more games. You can chase those endorphins. So you pull the jackpot lever, and try and buy packs that have better players in them.
They had me hooked from day one.
Yeah.
Like I still remember in 2009 when they put out the video of like, you can win trophies. You open packs. You put these players in your team. You get good chemistry by putting players from the same nation or the same league or the same team together. And then they play better together because they have these links together. They had me from day one. I'm a Foot founder from day one on my account. But like, you know, if these guys that are running these Road to Glory accounts where they can only play the players that they buy out of that they get out of packs, they can't even buy players off the market to use on their team. You get really involved with them when they pull a good player. You feel good for them if it's somebody that you associate with or somebody that you can relate to on stream. And it just becomes a lot of fun. And that's where the content angle comes in. You know, like for me, it's like I just have like a team and I can't see anybody being attached to my team. But realistically speaking, just like Daily Fantasy, people want your advice on something if they think that you're pretty good at something. So they're like, well, what do you think about, have you played with this player? What do you think about this player? I was thinking, this is my team. Take a look at my team and tell me what you think. Grade my team. Everybody becomes Lisa Simpson. Grade me.
Yep. There is such a video games, I mean, is a way bigger market than fantasy football.
I mean, look, who's the most known fantasy sports person in the world? It's a very easy question.
Matthew Berry.
There. How many followers does Matthew Berry have on Twitter?
I don't actually. I bet it's. Let's guess right now. If I set the line.
995,000.
I don't actually know. I would take the over on that.
It was just under a million a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, it is 990,000.
It's in that range, right?
Right.
So if you look at. Now look at who's the second most well known person in fantasy?
Silva, probably.
How many followers does he have? 180?
Yeah, something like that.
Right, 150, 180.
Yeah, which is like not even close to the numbers that video game content creators do. Not even close.
And they're multi-platform, right? They've got, not even looking at the ninjas of the world, who's this massive outlier, right? But just FIFA, let's focus on FIFA. Nick28T, Nepenthes, Castro, Bateson, Marshall, these dudes have hundreds of thousands, some of them 1.5 to 2 million Twitter followers.
Yeah.
They've got millions, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of YouTube followers, subscribers and followers on Twitch. They're getting 5 to 20,000 concurrent viewers on a stream on a day in, day out basis for 8 hours a day. You know?
Yeah.
It's a totally different animal and a much larger market. You know, like you said, Daily Fantasy is a niche within a niche. You know, there's sports fans and there's fantasy sports fans and there's daily fantasy sports fans.
Yeah.
So there's people who play video games, people who play FIFA, and then like, I don't know, people who play Ultimate Team who play FIFA. It's most of the people who play FIFA play close. Ultimate Team. But like everybody that's looking for content is looking for Ultimate Team content. And there's millions upon millions of people that play this game and want to see players walk out of packs and want to see how the best players play together. And the influence that these people have on social media is so much larger than the influence that fantasy sports professionals have on social media.
It's true, yeah. And I mean, I think there definitely is like a large number of fantasy sports players and daily fantasy sports players out there that like don't consume the content though. Like they just play and they just have fun with it. And I think for Ultimate Team, maybe that's not true. I think kind of everyone that is like that online consumes the content.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's how you present the content. And most of us that have been doing daily fantasy content or fantasy football content for the most part have been doing it wrong for a lot of years in the way that we distribute our content. And there's one group that I think has been doing it, not I think, that I can empirically prove, has been doing it better than everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for the fact that they were really such awesome dudes, we'd all hate them, you know? But it's the fantasy footballers.
Yeah, they crush it.
A while ago, they're crushing it. They just crossed like 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. You know how many I got? Like 13K.
Yeah, they crush it.
Yeah, and they were just three dudes that said, you know what? We think we can put out good content. Just like 6 years ago, I said, you know what? I think I can put out good content. I think I'm as good as anybody else that's putting out content right now. They said the same thing. They just went about it distribution-wise way better than anybody else and tackled search engines to gather as many people. So to say that fantasy football audience isn't looking for content to digest, I think is incorrect.
They definitely are looking for it, but I think
we're just putting it out in the wrong way.
Right. There you go. That's the answer is we have not reached all the target audiences yet, for sure.
And they did it earlier. And that's the thing I touched on earlier this podcast. Like, I wish I had started going after YouTube and really digging into how to beat their search engine, which is something I really focused on this summer. And I think I've somewhat succeeded in doing in terms of YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, at least
Twitter is just so small and we all treat it like it's so big, but there's a big wide internet out there that does not touch Twitter.
Exactly. And there's other platforms that are growing faster, like Instagram, and there's, Twitch. The fact that last season I had to educate my entire Twitter audience on what Twitch was, and it's okay to click on Twitch, guys. It's the same show I was doing on Roto Grinders. Well, do I have to subscribe to watch it? No. Anybody can watch it. I can lock the chat to subscribers only. So if you want to talk to me, you got to subscribe.
Yeah.
But you can do that for free if you click the subscribe button. You get me? If you have Amazon Prime, you might have a Twitch Prime sub just sitting there. It doesn't auto-renew. Yada, yada, yada. Right? And honestly, it's the easiest platform to grow. And in corporation with YouTube, it's very easy to get there. And I wish I had focused on YouTube sooner. But they did. The fantasy footballers did, much to their credit, and look at where they're at now.
Yeah, they're crushing it now.
Most people just look at YouTube like, I'm just going to throw my videos up there and then I'll link you to it. Like, talking stupid metrics for a second, because I know that everybody's going to sleep at this point. If you look at, okay, well, Al, you've got 40-something thousand Twitter followers, right? So if I click out a link to YouTube, you know, how many clicks do you really think you get through that link on Twitter? Right?
I mean, the click conversion's low these days.
It's a few hundred, right?
Yeah.
So if a video is getting 20,000 views on YouTube, but I'm sending 300 from the go live tweet, they're all coming via the search engine, via browse functions, via, suggested videos. So YouTube's out there doing much better work than I can on Twitter and finding me people that did not know who I was. Somebody asked me the other week on a comment, why do you think you are qualified to give NFL DFS advice? I've never heard of you.
What can you say?
If I tell you, I'm a jerk. Give you my resume, I'm a jerk. If I tell you that it's very easy to Google somebody to look up what they've done, I'm also a jerk. There's no right answer from my, it's like, just look it up, man. Like, it's very easy to find my DFS resume. But like, there's a lot of people on YouTube that don't have that and are somewhat anonymous. So I can see why people are skeptical as well. But like, generally speaking, you're going to reach a larger audience if you tackle SEO properly.
That's good. That's good inspiration. This has given me a lot to think about as a brand manager of the Davis-Matic brand. Why don't you give out all your links right now? Why don't you promote all this stuff to let people know if they thought that this was a good conversation and they want more?
Fair enough. On Twitter, I am at Al Zeidenfeld. You can find most of my things on there. Instagram as well. YouTube, just A Zeidenfeld. And on Twitch, Al_Smizzle.
Okay. I will, in the show notes for this podcast, I'm going to link Al's Twitch because I just want to get a gauge from the people listening to this, how interested you guys would be in watching more streams, because this is something behind the scenes I've been kind of working on and pondering for a while. Yeah. I kind of think I should.
You should just 100% click start, even for this podcast. You should.
Yeah, that might, people would actually, I think people would
download and listen to the audio later, but like, you'd get viewers just listening to the podcast because they just want to see your face. Maybe your dog pops on screen every once in a while.
Oh, my dog is tripping right now. Someone was just in my house fixing something in the bathroom and she was not having it. So I gotta go hang out with her and make her feel better right now. Al, thank you so much for doing the show. This was beautiful, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. Long time coming.